Last week, we introduced you to Michael Leonard from Leonard Trial Attorneys, and I just said, you know what? Next time there's a big federal case, I need to get Michael Leonard on of Leonard Trial Lawyers. Michael, I didn't realize I'd be talking to you 1 week later, my friend. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, I thought you were joking about having me on back so soon, but I'll take the appearance, okay?
Yeah, no, for sure. Obviously, the big news of the week, Michael Madigan indicted. And I should mention Michael Leonard, who is joining us now, has a track record of being an incredible defense attorney in federal case, getting not guilty charges more than basically anybody else. And that's, or not guilty results, more than anyone else. That's hard to do. So, Michael, I guess I'll just start. What's your general reaction to what you've seen, read, and heard about what the federal government is alleging that Michael Madigan did?
Well, there's not, and on the one hand, there's not a lot new, but there is some more detail. So I think we all knew going back to 2020 that this was the government's intent. You know, the government likes to take their time and build these federal cases. And so in 2020, if you remember, the big news was that ComEd was charged in federal court with these very same allegations. And there was allusions to Michael Madigan, although he wasn't identified as Michael Madigan. So then ComEd in 2021 pled guilty and agreed to pay a $200 million fine for this conduct. So obviously everyone was waiting, when are they going to indict Michael Madigan? Because that was their whole scope of the indictment against ComEd, by alluding to Michael Madigan, not by name, but in his position. Everyone knew that's who they were talking about. So we expected this to happen. And, you know, it's pled under what's called a racketeering theory. But really, in simple terms, it's a bribery case. Mm-hmm. You know, the heart of the case is that Michael Madigan, according to the government's allegations, was able to get ComEd to pay money to other parties, not him, but for his benefit. And so that's really the crux of this case, and we can talk in more detail. I'm sure you want to ask a lot of questions.
Oh, I do. But that was a great roundup. I appreciate that, the perspective of that. When you say bribery, and you mentioned it there, it wasn't direct payments to him. Like back in the old day, bribery was sticking money in a bag or an envelope, and it went across the desk. And this isn't. So what I want to ask you, Michael, is how hard is it for the government to prove some of these charges in this political sphere, right? Because I think it's a little bit nebulous what politicians are or aren't allowed to do, right? Like job recommendations don't necessarily on their face value aren't illegal, right? Like people recommend people for other things all the time. It's got to be somewhat difficult for the government to prove these things, right?
No doubt. I think this is a very defensible case. I mean, it's going to come down to a lot of indirect testimony evidence against Michael Madigan. You know, for instance, the heart of the allegations are that one of his right-hand man, Mr. McLean, was interacting with ComEd and referring to Mr. Madigan as our friend and essentially shaking them down, telling them that they had to hire certain law firms, they had to hire certain summer interns, they had to hire certain people. But again, that's not Michael Madigan, that's McLean, allegedly on Madigan's behalf. So, you know, it's not the money in the bag like the old days. You know, there's intermediaries here that would make the case harder to prove. I think the one thing that's a little bit surprising, perhaps, is that there are specific allegations where the government contends that Michael Madigan directly engaged in things such as phone calls and emails, and they claim to have direct evidence of that, which will take testimony from others who will say, you know, Michael Madigan told me this or told me that. But for the most part, you're right. The allegations are that Madigan used third parties to interact with folks like ComEd to get done what he allegedly wanted to get done.
I mean, it's all going to come down to, you know, what he said in these emails or these phone calls or in these taped conversations with former Alderman Solis, right? Because you can be delicate with language, you can wink and nudge someone along and kind of skirt the world of bribery. Or is the government allowed to say, hey, look, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, jury, you can say it's a duck.
Well, that's a circumstantial case they're going to put forward. So, you know, I think Solis is only a part of this. You know, the big players are McLean, who and some others who are allegedly interacting directly with ComEd. I mean, the other allegations you're referring to is that the allegation is that Madigan got Solis on a state board, and in exchange, Solis steered business from others to Madigan's law firm. So, again, like you're saying, you have these direct, indirect connections with all this evidence. So it will come down to folks like McClain and others who will have to testify and testify convincingly that they, in turn, had direct communications with Michael Madigan. And that's going to be difficult to prove in many instances because you're not going to have direct evidence of the substance of what Michael Madigan allegedly said to these other parties.
How successful is the government, either here locally or the federal government, at getting politicians found guilty? I mean, is it usually a slam dunk, or are they 50-50, or is it hard to tell because things have changed so much over the last 40, 50 years?
Well, I think statistically that they have a very good record. I wouldn't say this case is anything close to a slam dunk, but yeah, as you know, from the indictments and the plea agreements and the trials of politicians in the Chicago area and the state of Illinois, they have been quite successful. I don't think this case by any means is a slam dunk from a defense perspective.
Do we, obviously we don't know everything the federal government has, and in their press conference, obviously they're not trying to reveal too much. So what's happening behind the scenes right now? I imagine Michael Madigan and his attorneys are going to start to see that evidence, right? That's his right to see what the government has against him so that they can prepare a proper defense.
Yeah, something that you and I touched upon last week is that at the beginning of one of these federal cases, since the federal government has been working on the case for literally several years, they've amassed just gigabytes of data, you know, disks full of what are called discovery materials, witness interviews, grand jury testimony, you know, bank records, data, emails, voicemails, you know, anything you can possibly imagine. And so very quickly, the defense lawyers get a gigantic dump of the evidence, and it's going to take months, literally months, and probably longer than that, to get their arms around just all of the discovery materials. So we would expect that to take a lot of time, but also there'll probably be some motion practice. You know, there'll probably be an attack on the indictment, a motion to dismiss the indictment, or other attacks on the legal theory here. Because, as you know, this is pled as a racketeering case. And, you know, traditionally racketeering cases have been brought against entities such as the mob, drug cartels. And so it's not always a political organization or enterprise that is the subject of a racketeering case. So I'd expect motion practice from the attorneys and then quite a bit of time to review the discovery and get their arms around it. I mean, I can't imagine a case like this being ready for trial until probably, you know, 2024 is a reality.
With a name like Michael Madigan and the reputation that he has, and, you know, people have been alleging things for a long time, and there's a very political, heated atmosphere here around Michael Madigan. How hard is that jury selection going to be once and if we get to that point, right? Like, that's going to be hard, and I imagine his defense attorneys are going to say, look, these people have preconceived notions going into this trial about who Michael Madigan is and what he's done.
Yeah, that's always an issue in a highly publicized case, including one, you know, involving a politician. So the way the court attacks that is kind of some different techniques to do that. One, there'll be a very detailed juror questionnaire. Well, they'll have to answer questions in writing about their exposure to allegations about Madigan, what they've read and heard about him. Do they have any preconceived ideas of him? Do they have any personal interaction from a political standpoint with him? So that'll ferret out a lot of questions during the what's called the voir dire, the jury questioning process. That'll provide a lot of fodder for follow-up. And, of course, you know, the attorneys on both sides will be trying to figure out, is there a particular bias either way in favor of Madigan or against him? There's going to be a lot of jurors that are going to have a quite favorable impression of Mike Madigan, and may even have, you know, personal or, you know, three layers of connections to him. So, you know, both sides are going to be keenly interested in, can the jurors be fair and impartial despite what they know about him, despite what they've heard about him, either in a positive or negative way?
Reading through the indictment, you know, obviously there's a lot of things alleged there that are very serious, of course, and could, of course, undermine people's trust in government. How much does the federal government usually put in those documents? And I guess what I'm asking is, if someone read through the whole thing and they say, I don't see a smoking gun, is it because the smoking gun is going to be held until trial? What makes the government decide exactly how much they want to share this early in the process? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. In a politically charged case like this, where they know it's going to get oodles of publicity and attention, they are very much more careful and much more detailed than a regular indictment. You know, in federal court indictment, in a criminal case can be extremely bare bones. I mean, essentially, the standard is, you know, does it possibly, you know, does it possibly set forth a federal crime, which the most bare bones of facts will satisfy that standard. You know, really, are the elements of the crime charged in a very conclusory fashion? So that's the standard indictment. This case is the jumbo. You know,
right.
So if you read this thing, not only does it 106 pages, but there is a lot of detail. And that was intentional, because they know that a lot of people will be reading this. They know that potential jurors will read this.
I was just going to ask that.
A lot of publicity.
I was just going to ask that. Is that they are trying? I don't want to say the federal government is trying to taint the jury, but I mean, I know they want to start setting the public opinion in that way, right? Like, I mean, that is a move done by the federal government intentionally, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of laughable, because from the defense attorney standpoint in a federal criminal case, you know, if you're out having a press conference, you know, the federal government's going to accuse you of attempting to influence the jury pool. But that's what the federal prosecutors do every day. You know, they announce an indictment, they hold a press conference, they talk about the allegations in detail as if the person has done them, you know, as if they've already been tried. They put up a press release on their website talking all about the detail of the indictment at that very end.
Right at the end.
Right at the end, there's a little statement that says, hey, by the way, you know, this person is just charged. He hasn't been convicted of anything, you know. So it's kind of funny. So there's no question that the intent of the federal government is to put their best foot forward, and is to, you know, you can't accuse them of actually trying to influence the jury. But let's face it. I mean, the net result of it is giving the public the facts so that they can be influenced at this early stage.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think you kind of alluded to this at the beginning, but just, you know, having read through it, and if they're really putting a lot of their stuff in there to put that best foot forward, as you'd say, you don't think this is a slam dunk?
Oh, by no means. I mean, you know, some of the allegations go to, you know, Madigan or his organization allegedly, you know, putting forth candidates for summer internship jobs. You know, a lot of people won't be impressed with those types of allegations. Others are far more serious, and there is some detail to support them. For instance, they're alleging that, you know, to gain the confidence of Madigan and the Illinois House and Illinois Senate, the legislature, that, you know, these intermediaries would interact with ComEd and get them to appoint people to positions within the company as consultants, or to have ComEd use certain law firms. And so there's some more meatier allegations that will be, hopefully, if you're the government, supported by testimony that it was actually Michael Madigan doing that. But again, that's the sort of stuff that's lacking. And, you know, the overarching argument is that, look, Michael Madigan, as powerful as he is, he can't pass legislation by himself. So, you know, there's still a question of if he was really exerting this type of influence. He doesn't have the authority or power, the argument would be, to pass these bills in 2011 and 2016 and 2018, allegedly on behalf of ComEd by himself. So that's a huge hole in the government's case.
Michael Leonard, I really appreciate your perspective. Just before I let you go really quickly, I always wonder, and I know you're busy enough with plenty of other things going on, but whenever you see like a high-profile case like this, does part of you wish, I wish I was in the courtroom for this one?
Oh, of course. That's any trial's dream. You know, any case that captures your fancies, you want to be trying it. You want to see yourself cross-examining the government agents and the cooperators. And, of course, that's what we all want to do.
All right. Michael Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers. Great to chat with you again, my friend. Okay.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate you having me on, John. Take
Absolutely.
Care.
Talk soon.